It's so good to be back, genuinely. I don't quite know what to say except it's just good to be back. I have a feeling of warmth and comfort among this body here that I don't think will ever be replaced. The excitement of this work will come in about a week from today. But the warmth and the feeling of acceptance and a feeling of a place is here with this body here. And I'm trusting my adrenaline will get up as it normally does each year in about 4 or 5 days when they start pouring in here. Something happens inside me and you that's necessary in order to cope with that bunch for 9 months. And I'm confident that it will come at that time. However, today, I feel very weak and inadequate. I feel like a man that's been sent to bed to recover. But nevertheless, when he gets up and gets over it even, when he gets out of the bed, he still feels weak. And I feel a bit that way today. Today, I'm going to use it, this hour and these few moments, I feel like I must use it to just touch base with you, to report to you, to kind of get back in step with you. You know, a flagman doesn't just jump on a running train. He runs along beside it, and then when he's established the pace of the train, then he gets on it. Of course, a hobo does the same thing. And I'm not sure whether I feel more like a hobo or a flagman today, but nevertheless, I feel the need to just walk along with you today at this hour and sort of get in step with you again. Today will be a bit more personal than you're accustomed to, and it's a bit more personal than I'm comfortable with. But because of the circumstances of the past 3 months, I feel that today will be necessary to deal with it as I hope to deal with it. First of all, I want to acknowledge and express appreciation to this congregation for making the leave of absence possible. I want to express appreciation to the elders for their decision to allow it. And I want to express appreciation to those of you in the congregation here because of your generosity. You made it possible. You continued my support and me and my family during this 3 month period, and it made the events that took place very possible. There'll be many benefits that will come from what has happened. Many benefits have already come. For one thing, I think it may have set a precedent that I hope will be reproduced over the country. Someone observed that perhaps preachers would move less often if instead of moving, the elders would just tell them, why don't you just take a couple of months off and recover and not use the move as a time of recovering. The honeymoon in many preachers' lives that happens about every 2 years or three with a new congregation may be simply the need for some time off after 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 years. But the leave of absence gave you a chance for a change of pace. It gave you a chance for a change of emphasis. And it gave the elders an opportunity for a more direct input into this congregation from the pulpit. It increased their load, I know, but nevertheless, it gave them more visibility. I think you'll know the elders better after this summer than you knew them before. It gave me a chance also for a change of pace, or at least for a change of rut. That may be more appropriate because the pace didn't change all that much. In fact, if anything, it seemed to have increased. But I think that was due to the fact that I was dealing in things with which I was not familiar. And I found myself going in circles, gaining less ground, but stirring up probably more dust. For those of you who do not know, and I don't want to belabor the point, but we built a house this summer. Louise and I ourselves built it, along with the help of those who knew what they were doing. And we plan to spend the next 9 months rebuilding our marriage. If your marriage is not in good shape, don't attempt to build a house. And that's not funny. That was intended to be serious. But we built a house and are now living in it. We're not all settled, but we're looking forward to your being guests in our home shortly. And we'll give the signal when we have all the boxes unpacked and all. During this summer also, I was involved in a follow-up campaign for the May campaigns. We went into about 12 different congregations, the church here did, with the students, during the week of graduation in May. And then during the summer, I visited 10 of these congregations on Sundays, spoke to them, thanked them for their hospitality, and did what I could to encourage them in their follow-up of the May campaign's work. And I'm convinced that this was good. It was essential. I got to see into the congregations from which our students come, and I also got to see some of the congregations into which our students go during the May campaign's efforts each year. And such contact with people at these levels is essential. It's, if not absolutely necessary, at least it's advantageous. Because preachers have a very, they have a way of becoming irrelevant. They have a way of becoming impractical and impertinent, speaking very matter-of-factly about things which in fact don't really always matter, and being out of touch with reality. And many times preachers spend the hours that are spent in the pulpit talking about things that don't touch the needs of the people topside nor bottom. So any contact that preachers can have with the rest of the church on a level that's somewhat removed from the ivory tower into which many times they flee is beneficial. I was reminded of what Ezekiel wrote when he had been sent by God to speak to the Israelite nation. Though he had been sent to speak and to say what he said, God said, whether they receive it or not. Ezekiel, he said he went and sat down where they sat for 7 days. He just sat and listened and watched, and that was wise. It gave him a perspective from which to speak. Even the Lord had to be made like his brethren in every respect, the Hebrew writer said, in order that he might become a faithful and merciful high priest in the service of God. And so it's necessary, the contact. I've always been aware, or at least for the last several years at least, that effective preaching comes from keeping your mind in the Word and keeping your heart and your mind in the lives of people. Stay in the Word, I tell young men, and stay in the homes of people. Stay in their lives. And this time of absence that you've allowed me to be a part of and allowed me to enjoy, though it decreased the regular preparation that I've been involved in the Word for nearly 30 years, it decreased that intensive preparation. It, at the same time, gave me the opportunity to be in the lives of people on a level that I find I've never been before. And it's that I want to bear witness to this morning and just tell you a few things about some of the events and some of the things that I've learned. And that's what I say about it being more personal than I'm usually comfortable with. But if you'll bear with me today, then I'll be able, I think, to do it. The people we were thrown with was one of the highlights of the summer. And I mean both in and out of the church. The people we were thrown with in the church was a rare and, I guess, unrepeatable experience. There were people in the church that I met, and I saw a depth and a richness of their lives that I was not aware of. People who are not all that visible, or at least not all that vocal. One man and his family, especially the man himself, they're not here this morning, they're out at Latona. The man, Don Eads, and I'll say what I want to say about him because he isn't here, and you need to know Don Eads. He's a man of great depth, of spiritual maturity, and I would not have known that had I not been thrown into this very unique situation of of building this house. He's a contractor. He builds church buildings. And he has Sea Ark Construction Company, and he's a very responsible man. But he's a very responsible Christian. And we were thrown into contact with him. He's out at Latona this morning. It is Latona, isn't it? North of here on 16. He's there because of the fact that the church needs him. He's been out there for years. And he goes there every morning, on Sunday morning, and helps the church there. And then in the last few months, he's been here with this congregation here on Sunday evenings and Wednesday evenings. But you need to get to know Don Eads. There's a strength there that I wasn't aware of. The family of the Hines, Harold Hines and his family. I find it difficult to talk about them because of the extent to which we were together this summer. They're here this morning. You heard the reading of the letter by Anita. She has been afflicted with cancer, and the depth of her spirituality can be detected in the letter that she wrote. But Harold and Shirley Hines are a rare breed of people, and I was able to see that depth in their lives. Last Sunday, I spoke out at Southside, or Sunday before, yes, last Sunday, I guess it was, and saw something else that I didn't see here. There was a man there, John Sanders. He's a doctor here in town, a young Christian man, and I never saw him really take any lead here. But last Sunday, he was the one in charge of the table, and he simply preached a sermon around the Lord's table. And I thought, what strength there was there that I wasn't aware of. And how many times people like that, who, for one reason or other, are overlooked in a congregation this large, there's really a depth and a strength that we're not aware of, but which becomes visible once they're given the opportunity to serve. And I wonder how many there are in this congregation this morning like that. You'll probably never be seen here or heard from. But the strength that's in your life and the abilities that you possess are what make this church as strong as it is in the depth that it is. But anyway, these people in the church they impressed me. But then there were people outside the church that I was thrown in contact with. They also impressed me in a different way, but nonetheless, they impressed me. You know, we don't have a broad enough contact with people. This community is a closed community in many respects. And I don't say that except to acknowledge a fact. I think Brother Carr has done as much to open the Harding community to the Searcy community and build a bridge between the two as any man that I've ever known in this community. But we don't have broad enough contacts. One of my daughters said the other day, she said, I don't have a single friend who is not a Christian. Well, that's not good. We need to be broadened. I hope you don't have to build a house in order for it to be accomplished in your life. But having built one this morning or this summer, we were brought into contact with such people as that. Most of them were in the building trade and had been in it a long time. I went down to one of the lumber yards and asked what I thought was a very sensible question. I had asked earlier than that, I said, is it in your policy for us to buy from you as a contractor? He said, yes. And then I asked this, what I thought was a sensible question. And he said, are you a contractor? I said, yes, my wife and I are building a house this summer. He said, well, what do you do for a living? I said, well, I preach down here at the college church. He said, well, I hope you're a better preacher than you are a contractor. Well, I didn't realize how ignorant I was, but he did. But it's just, and the patience of these people in dealing with someone who is a greenhorn, I was really surprised and amazed at to what extent they'll go to help and to be of assistance. And the building community, the building trade, and the craftsmen were very helpful in that respect. But there were other people who were involved. There was one man named Thomas who was a block layer. Just a plain country boy. He had a crew of men, and they were one of the first people that worked with us on that site. And the day that they worked with us, I asked them if they'd have lunch with me and my family. And they agreed. They said they would. So I sent to the store and bought some bologna and bread and cokes. And we sat down together at noontime, he and his crew of men. And they were rough characters. Well, as we began to get ready to eat, I paused. And I said, "Thomas, I don't know whether you men are accustomed to giving thanks for your food or not. But let's pause just for a minute and express thanks to God." And those old men pulled their hats off and placed them over their hearts and bowed their heads. And we expressed thanks to God in a way that I think probably we've never done before nor since. And when we lifted our eyes again, Thomas was very touched. And he was moved to say something. And there was this hush that fell over the group, and he said, "Well, I'm not living like I was raised to live." And it made me know that his mother and daddy, probably his mother, had raised him to live a better life than he was living. Later on, we were back together again for something. I discovered that he had laid one of the walls wrong, and I wasn't so ignorant that I missed that anyway. So he went out and we took the wall down and he replaced it. But on the way out there, I told him, he said something about his smoking. He said, "Do you mind if I smoke?" I said, "No, you can stand it, I can." He got the point. And I didn't press the issue. I just simply let him know that I thought it was against his health. And he said, I said, "Thomas, you know, the medical doctors are saying that to smoke your cigarettes like that, 2 packs a day for your adult life, will cut 10 years off of your life." And he thought a moment. He said, "Well, if it's anything like the last 10 years, I don't really care." And Ephesians, the second chapter in verse 12, took on new meaning to me, where it says that, "Remember that you Gentiles were once afar off. You were alienated from the commonwealth of Israel, strangers from the covenants of promise, separated from Christ, having no hope, and without God in the world." And I don't believe I'll ever read that verse, but what I think about this man, if it's like the last 10 years, I just don't really care. Well, a greater respect was created in me for those who are in what we call secular work. For one thing, those of you who are in secular work, and especially those who work on commissions and who do not have a regular paycheck that you collect every week from some well-established organization, you manifest a depth of faith in your whereabouts of your food each day and your necessities. You exhibit a depth of faith that I've never had to demonstrate. I've always been dependent upon God filling my needs through the church. I've been supported for about 25 or 30 years and have been supported by Christians. And it's been our experience in our lives as a preacher and his family that Christian people have always been very dependable. They haven't always supplied what we wanted, but they've always supplied what we needed. And that supply has always been very dependable and regular. But not so with those people who work in secular work. Many of those men perhaps would not work for a Christian or would not know it. They would be working primarily with those in the world. They'd be paid by those in the world. Many times they didn't know whether they would ever be paid or not. And I just find that to be able to approach life and to work in an orderly fashion, to do their job, and to commit themselves, at least with some calmness of mind, to the everyday task, I felt was very beautiful. And I have a greater respect for those in secular work for having been among them this summer. Those in secular work bring to the assembly needs that I was not aware of until having been among it this summer myself. For example, I remember sitting right over here one Sunday night, or one Wednesday night, And I remember the song leader said, let us stand and sing one verse or whatever it is of this song and remain standing for the prayer. And I remember distinctly thinking, why don't you mind your own business and leave me alone? Every bone in me ached. I'd been up and down ladders all day long, carrying 2x10s and 2x whatever else there was to carry. And I was so tired, and my bones ached so much that I remember almost feeling hostile toward him. Ray Dixon came over to me that very evening and said, Jim, have you ever felt like when somebody asks you to stand and sing that you just wish you'd hush? And it must have shown on my face because he came over and asked me that question. I learned some things, and let me just mention them, two or three, and then the lesson or these remarks are yours. I learned to receive and to give to degrees to which I'd been unaccustomed. I learned to receive from Harold Hines and John Nash, a young man from New Zealand, who came all the way from Scotland through America on his way back to New Zealand in order to spend 2 months with us finishing out our house. Well, you say, where in the world did that happen, or how did it happen? Well, the Lord knew I didn't know how to finish out a house. I didn't have a clue. The same way that Harold Hines came up to me at the beginning of this project and said, I'm going to be with you right on through. I'm going to be there with you every day until you've got the structure up. How did he come to do that? Well, the Lord knew I didn't know how to start a house either. And didn't know how to start one, didn't know how to finish one. And I've had to learn to accept from these men the graciousness and the generosity of their lives. I've just had to learn how to say, well, I accept that. Thank you. And yet at the same time, and there were many others who came when they saw that we were not quite on schedule, and when they saw that Louine and I were nearer finished than the house was, they began to come out and say, we want to help. And so many of you came out, and others of you offered, and others of you prayed. Dr. Benson came up to me one day, and he said, Jim, when are you going to put on your roof? I said, well, Dr. Benson, it's just been put on. And he showed this disappointment. He said, oh, well, he said, I was going to come and help you put your roof on. He's just 80 years old, but he said, I've roofed in my lifetime, and I know how to do it. But that sort of thing makes us, it made us have to be able to receive graciously. But at the same time, we were called upon during that concentrated period of time to give to degrees that I hadn't been asked to give also. I've never had any other period of my life where I felt so many people were depending on me physically and spiritually, people who weren't kin to us, people who were not able to live their lives productively on their own. We were called upon to give to those people like we've never been called on to give before. And we were called beyond ourselves. And I found myself being forced to pray, Lord, I want to know what it means to die with Jesus Christ. I want to share his death. Philippians, the third chapter and verse 10. Paul longed to know Jesus Christ and to be conformed to his death. And I find that that was an increasing desire on my part during this summer, because I found that it was necessary to die to myself if I was going to fill the needs of those who were depending on me, just as I felt that those who were serving me had died to themselves and were putting my needs before theirs. I also saw this. The world is too much with us. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. I find that during this summer, I was thrown into an aspect of life that I've not been all that much involved in. And that is in the day-to-day procurement and perhaps preservation of things that are purely temporal. I've never been really involved in that sort of thing and don't intend to get involved in it permanently again, or I just don't want to be involved in it like that. But I find that one of the things that pressed us so to the bone was that perhaps we bit off more than we could chew within that length of time. And I think that Matthew, the sixth chapter, needs to be restudied, where Jesus says no man can serve two masters. He'll either hate the one and love the other, or he'll despise the one and cling to the other. But no man can serve two masters. Well, you say we have to work. I know that. In fact, Paul told the Thessalonians, if any man will not work, neither let him eat. But brethren, I want to ask you, as I ask myself, do we set our goals for physical things so high that we find ourselves unable to cope with those and at the same time put the kingdom of heaven first? I know we have to work, but I'm afraid maybe we've set our physical goals so high that it has caused us to be unable to put the kingdom of God first in our lives, and consequently we find ourselves stretched beyond our power to accomplish. And not like what Paul told Timothy, having food and clothing to be content. Those are bare essentials, just the bare necessities. Having food and clothing to be content. He said, we brought nothing into the world, we can't take anything out of it. But having food and clothing, we ought to be content. And I wonder if maybe we've lost that principle. One of our friends here in the church met my wife out at one of the shopping centers during the midst of all this, and she asked her the question that many of you ask many times, how's the house coming? And when Lorraine told her, and she began to sense that all the involvement that was involved, and when she began to sense the expense that was involved, and all of the time that was consumed, and all of the having to do with things, she made this very striking observation that hurt, and it kind of makes you look at yourself. She said, so you're like the rest of us after all. And I thought, wow, that's quite an observation. So you're like the rest of us after all. She didn't mean it in a bad way at all. But it makes me wonder, what are the rest of us like? Or what are all of us like now? Are we involved so much in physical things that we, as Louise said, really, she said, we were so busy, she said, I didn't even have time to be a Christian. Now, what did she mean by that? She just meant that she was involved in so many things that she had not been involved in ever before, that her whole 3 months took it just kind of took on a different shade. A different luster, a different lack of luster, perhaps. But she just said, I just didn't have time to be a Christian. We didn't have the time to do the things that we normally had the time to do. And you know why we have the time to do it? Well, for one reason, you support us. And I want to thank you again for that support. I've never been more thankful for support than I am right now today. Sometimes you take it for granted. And sometimes you think you have it coming. I don't think I've got it coming anymore. Terry called this morning about 7 o'clock, and they've not yet gotten all their support. They lack a fourth of it. And he made these same observations. It's strange how he said, and Charlotte said to him earlier in the week, she said, you know, if we had gotten all of our support and had come up here with our full support to where we weren't really kind of stretching things to make everything go around, she said, I don't know whether I would have ever come to this conclusion or not. But she said, and he said, we don't take our support for granted any longer. We're very thankful for every penny that comes. And I find that same awareness had come to me. Well, we'll talk more about that during the year. But let's be conscious that we may have set our physical goals so high that we don't have the time really to put the kingdom of heaven first. And that's really the issue that Jesus came to confront in our lives. Are you going to serve God or are you going to serve mammon? I could not spend the rest of my life working as I did the last 3 months and putting the emphasis that I did on things the last 3 months as I did. I couldn't do it. I'd give it up. But anyway, I learned one other thing. I can't live without daily communion with my Father. Can't do it. You know, I've said this for years. You can't live without daily communion with God. I saw this coming, though. I knew before I went into this summer. I saw it coming that I would not be able to live without the daily communion with God. Now, I'd been telling you about it, and you'd already been doing it, many of you, but some of you don't. But now I knew I was going to be put to the test. It's easy enough for me to get up as a gospel preacher, spend time in the Word every day, then spend time during the day in the Word, and then spend time on Lord's days preaching the Word. It's easy enough. But when you spend 6 days a week driving nails, many of which are your own, when you spend 6 days a week doing that, I thought, all right, good friend, you're going to be put to the test to see whether you practice what you preach or not. So from the very outset, from the very word go, my day began at 5:30 in the morning, every day, putting my head into the Word. And you know what? I would not have lasted 2 weeks with the pressures and the unfamiliarity of all that was going on around me and the newness of it. I wouldn't have lasted in time had I not been able to get that daily feeding on the Word of God and my daily association with Him. Couldn't have lasted. And those of you who do not get it, I don't know how you last. I don't know how you survive. Well, I don't know whether we're yet running at the same speed as each other is or not, but I felt like I just had to sit with you this morning and talk and kind of let you know where I'm coming from and where I've been and what I think some of the benefits of this 3 months have been. I believe with all of my heart that this 3 month period has been of the Lord. I believe that. I don't know what He's going to use it for. I don't know what He's going to do with it. But I've already committed it to Him. It's His house. It's not mine. And some wise man had on the sign out here 1 week, "They labor in vain who build a house unless the Lord builds it." And I think they were doing that for my benefit. Now, they could have chosen, there are about 1,500 or 2,000 pages in this book. They could have chosen anyone, but they chose that one. And you know it's very true. But it's the Lord's house. It isn't mine or ours. And we are looking for how God wants to use it. And we're in submission to His will on that matter. I'm going to ask that we pause just a moment. I'm going to ask Jess Buse, if you would. I feel the need of one of the elders just kind of pull things together and identify with it and extend the invitation to us all. And let's do that. Jess, would you do that, please?
Thank you, Jim, for this report of your summer's activities, for this insight into the personal lives of some people, and for your exhortation to put God first in all things. Knowing you as I know you, I know that you will always be more of a flagman than a hobo. I do sincerely believe that you're probably a much better preacher than you are a contractor, too. But we hope you have been very refreshed from taking off this summer, and we look forward to a great work as these students come in about a week. This is a very unique congregation in that our size is about doubled each time about this time of the year. And as Jim pointed out in talking about one of the men who was working there on the house, people have great needs. And I know personally that I'm not conscious of the needs of people to the extent that I should be. I imagine all of us are that way to some extent. And with this great influx of students, we're going to be faced with a great challenge. Let's pray that we'll be equal to the task. Try to determine their needs, to help them, but not only to these Christians, but also to those who have not rendered obedience to the gospel. So in a sense, this is a new beginning for us. And perhaps some of you are here today who have not put God first. in your lives. Solomon said, fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And as Jim alluded to in the Sermon on the Mount, the Lord said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. We must do that. So if there are some of you here who perhaps have rendered obedience to the gospel at some time, but have gone astray, perhaps in a public way, and you feel a need to make that known and to ask for forgiveness, or perhaps some of you are here who have never rendered obedience to the gospel's message and desire to do so, and we know there are some here who have recently moved into the community. You need to be a part of the Lord's work. And if you'd like to identify yourself with this congregation, we would ask you to do that at this time if you so desire. But whatever your needs, if you feel a need to come forward, we would ask you to do it as we stand and sing.